sales, vet dates, housemates, band members, club stars, clothes schools, open bars for sale, for rent, for swap. You name it. It's like a virtual town notice board.
MyLocalTown.ie. Have your say and get the word out.
Keeping a watchful eye on the environment and how it affects us. Dublin City FM.
Hello everyone and welcome to Science Spinning, the show with an Irish spin on science with me, Sean Duke, here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Well, of course, we all know there's a lot that's not going right in Ireland at the moment economically. Scientifically, well, we're still motoring along and there's two big events that are coming up soon that actually show that we're still doing very well on that particular front. So on today's show, I'm going to be talking about the City of Science next year, 2012, and I've got the programme director, David Farrell, studio to tell at the end of this month. There's a conference on one of our famous scientists, John Tyndall. This was the man who asked questions such as what? Also was the man who was the first. There are some greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. There's a conference being run, Tyndall, and we'll be talking later to Dylan in Carlo, who's an expert on Tyndall, and we'll be talking about him with Norman later on. But first up, we have David Fahey here. Welcome to the programme. Tell us what you're about and how big is this event?
Okay, well, first of all, the anchor event, if you like, for a year of celebration of science in 2012, it will be Europe's biggest international science conference. That's being 11th to the 15th of July. It's called ESOF. You will see and hear more about it as we go along.
Which stands for?
Euroscience Open Forum.
Okay.
So it's an opportunity for scientists across science disciplines to together really to talk about issues and topics that relate to them across them rather than just in their own special areas.
So okay, because a lot of conferences, scientific conferences, are very focused, aren't they, in one particular area? So this is a very general.
This is a very general conference, and you're right, most scientific conferences are highly specialised, but we will have everybody from social scientists to nuclear physicists to biologists to chemists attending for 5 days next year. We expect to have over 5,000 international delegates, which will make it the biggest conference of its kind in Europe next year and will be the biggest one that will have come to Ireland.
Right. The biggest one ever to come to Ireland?
In science, anyway. And research, yes.
It's probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest, to come to the conference, the new conference centre, is it?
It will be by the time it happens. Now, there are others on the calendar for the conference centre further out in 2013 and so forth. But by the time this arrives, it will be the biggest to have been held in the
right, so apart from the scientific aspect, I mean, it's going to give us an economic shot in the arm, hopefully, as well, with all these people coming to visit.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, clearly there are a couple of other opportunities beyond the science one with this. Firstly, a very significant number of international visitors whom we will be trying to encourage to spend not just the 5 days of the conference in Dublin and in Ireland, but also extend their stay to include, you know, another couple of days in the city and even get them around the rest of the country. So we have those visitors coming, and we'll use this as an opportunity to showcase not just Ireland's science credentials, but Ireland's location credentials as a tourism destination.
Sure, so there's a lot of different angles to it. Yeah, and for the public, for people that are interested in science and maybe people that are maybe, you know, have a passing interest in science, what's all this about for them? Like, is there something there for everyone?
Yes, there is. And the intent is not just for the week of the conference, but actually for a major portion of the year of 2012. We're essentially going to be running a programme that would be similar to what you might call a science festival.
Okay.
It will start early in the year, and these are events that will happen outside the convention centre and will be designed particularly to engage with the general public. They will reach an intensity level the week of the conference. So for that full week in the middle of July, essentially Dublin will be a location, as will other urban centres around the country, but Dublin in particular will be a location for a major science festival.
Okay, so does this mean that you could go onto the web and you could look up if there's things of interest in your own area of Dublin or around the country then to see what's there that you might like to go to?
Yes, at the moment the final details on the exact content of the programme haven't been finalised. They will be over the next few weeks.
Okay.
So by the beginning of November, our website will have been updated with a significant list of content of activities happening throughout the year.
What's the website, by the way?
It's www.esof2012.org.
Okay.
That's ESOF2012.org.
Okay, grand. Now, to give us an idea of its appeal, it's a broad appeal, I know, but let's say for children, maybe you can think of an event or something, maybe as an example, and maybe for, say, adult person who might just have a passing interest in whatever, archaeology or something like that. I mean, is it that broad?
It is that broad. Well, firstly, let's maybe talk about the conference itself. Mm. It would be good to highlight some of the key speakers.
Sure, absolutely. That,
that
go ahead.
We have at it.
Yeah.
And we're delighted that there's a particularly strong Irish connection. Mm. The overarching theme of the conference is to look at the opportunities for science serving society.
Okay.
So it's a very broad, it has a very broad appeal. And under that umbrella, we have people, for example, like Mary Robinson, who has a significant climate change initiative that she is promoting at the moment. Mm-hmm. She will be speaking about climate change. We have Sir Bob Geldof attending as a keynote speaker, and no doubt he will be...
Not a well-known scientist, it has
no,
to be said.
No, but somebody with significant opinions about what science should be doing for society.
Okay.
And maybe perhaps what science hasn't been doing for society. So we expect him to be a significant challenge mm-hmm. to the visiting scientists. At another end of the spectrum, we have Professor Craig Venter, who is credited with producing artificial life in a laboratory.
This is the same man who produced his, or what's it called, the word, sequenced his entire genome, didn't he? All his genetic information years ago.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So his work is obviously, depending on your point of view, either very interesting or extremely controversial.
Mm.
We will also have, and there's a significant parallel with for Irish scientific history with Craig Venter, because in the early 1940s, there was a very significant Austrian scientist was invited to Dublin to set up the Dublin Institute of Advanced Studies by Eamon de Valera. And that was Erwin Schrödinger from Austria.
Yes,
and he published
Schrödinger's equation.
Schrödinger's equation.
Yeah.
He published a seminal scientific paper at the time asking the question, what is life?
Yeah.
So we're inviting Craig Venter back 70 years later or thereabouts to relook at that question.
Yeah, because there's always been a kind of a mystery, as, you know, we know, say, from Darwin or whatever, how life evolves and develops, etc. We think we know, but we don't know how life arose out of nothing, essentially.
Correct.
From lifeless elements, how did life evolve? So this right. That's the controversy, isn't it?
It is indeed. And what we're trying to do with the conference is, you know, to get people to deal with some of the fundamental questions that science has been trying to wrestle with since the beginning. So what is life is probably, for us, for humankind,
yeah.
the most fundamental. If we take it on to something a little more focused, we have themes covering health, climate, energy, mm-hmm. and so forth. So in those areas, we'll be asking questions like, you know, if in the climate area, is mankind or humankind going to burn, or are they mm-hmm. going to drown if we get things wrong with the climate?
Mm-hmm.
From the future of human beings and evolution and genomics and so forth, what do we think human version 2.0 will look like?
Exactly. You know, as we develop, are we going to become, well, we already have started to become kind of a bit more artificial in the sense of our artificial hips and everything. But, you know, if you think about it, there's some incredible things that might happen going 100 and 200 years into the future.
There are indeed. And I mean, the conference itself is open to anybody who has an interest in science to register for. And those are the kind of questions that would be dealt with at the event. So you're
really, the way you're talking is that it should be of interest to anybody who's curious about.
Yes, it is. And I think actually curious is a great word.
Mm.
I mean, this is meant to provoke, to stimulate, to generate interest in, to tickle people's curiosity. And I think that's mostly what it's about. It's get the conversations going, get people talking about science, get them talking about research, get them excited about it. Get engagement with the scientific community, try and understand, you know, what is the relevance of all of this work that's going on in research to people's normal lives.
Mm-hmm.
So apart from the conference itself, we will take it out of the convention centre for the festival element. And we've been working very closely, simply because of Ireland's tremendous creative background. So we're working with the arts communities, the performing arts communities, the worlds of culture and literature, to put on a programme of events that explore, you know, the boundaries between science, research, culture, art.
Right.
And for us next year, you know, our tagline is, you know, come to Dublin, where creativity and great science will meet.
Sure, because Dublin is a city of culture. There's no problem thinking of that, because we have O'Casey and everybody else that we can think of, Joyce, all of these
Indeed.
Great names. But maybe with science, it hasn't really been in the mainstream of Irish culture, perhaps up until now. you know, that we don't know who the great scientists are or what they've done.
And I think this is part of what we need to do, is we also need to help help us all understand the relevance of all of this scientific work to us. And perhaps historically we haven't been quite as engaged as we could have been. So this will be an opportunity to explore all of those. And, you know, particularly Ireland has a strength in its ability to be creative.
Sure. And would it be hard for members of the public to actually get into the events that they want to get into? Or, you know, is it on a ticket basis or walk-in, or how does that work?
There would be a full variety from, you know, walk-in. I think most of the events will probably have some ticketing simply to manage numbers. Mm. Some of them will be free. Some of them will be ticketed in terms of paid tickets. We will, at the conference itself, we intend to open a big exhibition area in the conference to the general public for part of the event. Access to the actual scientific discussions and sessions will be by ticket only, so you would for that you would need to register. But again, we have significant partners, both public sector and private sector partners, who are helping us put the program together. And the intent is to make it as available as far and wide as we possibly can, and as accessible as we possibly
sure.
can.
Sure. And how big is this, say, in European science, this event, like, to put it into context? Is this a big event for science in Europe?
In terms
to
of
host it?
Yeah, in terms of general science conferences, this is the biggest one.
Anywhere?
In Europe,
sorry.
It is
yeah.
the biggest one.
Yeah. Okay.
Its equivalent in America is run by an organization called the American Association for the Advancement of Science.
Sure.
It's much older, it's been around for much longer, and we will probably have a bigger event next year than they have had in the US. So it is truly a big event.
So it's a colossal event for a country our size or a
yes,
city our size. Yeah.
Dublin had to compete for the opportunity to host this. This is not something that you can just sort of go out and say, I want to run ESOF next time around. The bid process started as far back as 2007.
Right.
And Mary Robinson at the time was the chair of the committee of patrons. So there was very substantial support from right across Irish political and private life, and business life as well. And in the final event, Dublin had to compete with Vienna, which is a very, very significant competition
oh, sure.
in the world
yeah,
of science.
Yeah.
And from the point of view of the judging committee, Dublin got a unanimous vote. And so there was no dissenting vote for Dublin as the location.
Oh, so we did great.
We did really well. It's a and huge achievement
it's
for
an opportunity, really, isn't it, to, as well as promote science in Ireland to our native Irish people, of course, it's an opportunity to promote Irish science in Europe
yes, it
and
is.
Further afield as
yes,
well.
Yes, it is. Organisations, for example, such as Science Foundation Ireland in the last 10 years have produced dramatic results in terms of both the content from an Irish scientific research point of view and the view of our reputation abroad in research terms. So they have made major, major strides. This is another opportunity for us to showcase the actual extent to which we've come. It's also an opportunity for us, not just for the science world, but it's also an opportunity to showcase the city, mm-hmm. to showcase Dublin, to showcase Ireland, because business tourism is a very, very significant economic opportunity. And any event that we get or any occasion that we get to allow us to promote, you know, the joy of being able to come to Ireland, we will take. And so far, we've had a dramatic interest level way above what we expected in terms of content. We now want to turn that into, you know, getting delegates here and getting visitors here and giving them an opportunity to really, really enjoy
okay.
the visit.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to it myself anyway, definitely. So it's not just something that's going to happen in July. It's going to be right throughout the year, starting
it's right
in January.
Throughout the year. We'll start with announcements, major announcements in a couple of months' time.
We'll just give out that website again. I know that you're still updating all the time, but what is it again?
It's www.esof2012.com.
.org. Okay, thanks very much. You're listening there to David Fahey. He's the Programme Director with the Dublin City of Science event, which is taking place next year, with the main event in July in the Conference Centre. Thanks for coming in, David.
Thank you very much indeed.
Okay, now, just to move on, before we move on, actually, there was a story that caught my attention in the news this week. There's incredible strides being made in the whole area of human reproduction and fertility. We've heard, of course, of stem cells. Now, stem cells aren't often associated with the whole area of fertility or infertility. But what scientists have managed to do just recently, two things actually that caught my attention. A stem cell, which is the cell which is typically found in the embryo, the developing embryo in the woman's womb, but also can be found throughout life, but mainly in the embryo. These stem cells can be programmed to become an egg or a sperm cell. So in effect, what this means is that a gay couple, if it's a male couple, can have their own genetic children. Not quite happening yet in the real world, but in the lab this can be done. And also, for on the other side of the coin, if there's a gay couple, two ladies together, they can have their own genetic children, which is amazing because that obviously is an option that hasn't been available up to now. So the world is changing fast on these things. But now we're moving on. We're going to talk about John Tyndall, famous Irish scientist in the 19th century. He was a man who asked the question and gave us an answer for why the sky is blue, also the discoverer of greenhouse gases and many, many more things besides. And to talk about this, I'm delighted to welcome Norman Macmillan. He's a scientist based in the IT Institute of Technology in Carlow, who's written about Tyndall. Welcome, Norman.
Hello, how are you?
I know you call yourself Mac as well, so yeah. I call you Mac.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anymore.
Oh, are you? Sorry. Okay, you've moved.
We've been working in a company called Drop Technology that spun out of the college.
Okay, right. Well, that's fair enough. So you've moved out of the college. But on Tyndall, anyway, Tyndall is quite an amazing character. He, first and foremost, I suppose, he was quite a famous man in 19th century Britain, as it was then. We were part of Britain.
Yep. He was more famous for his mountaineering than anything, because mountaineers today don't read his books, Glaciers of the Alps and Mountaineering in 1861, and they think he's a mountaineer, and they have no idea that he was a scientist.
Right. Okay. But actually, there's a nice story. If we, I think the greenhouse gas thing, that whole story is linked to his visits to the Alps, is it?
Yeah, sure. The thing that he was started researching was glaciers, and he went up the mountains like most scientists to do measurements, but most of them were kind of fish out of water.
Yeah.
But Tyndall discovered he could go where no man had ever gone before.
And he was like a mountain goat. Yeah.
But he always had been. As a boy, he was hanging from Loughlin Bridge by his toes.
Where he was born, we should tell people, yeah. in Carlow, yeah.
So he was always kind of climbing and doing daredevil things. And, he just was naturally hardy and very, very able to endure kind of the hardship that mountaineering involves. So,
okay. We'll get on to that in a second, but let's just kind of try and paint a picture of the guy. He went on to become very famous and a really brilliant science communicator as well.
When he came out of Germany after doing a PhD, because he couldn't study anywhere in Ireland or the UK unless you were an established church. So he went to Germany and studied.
Unless you were in the established church?
Yeah, the Anglican church.
Right, okay. You couldn't get a PhD, was it?
We couldn't go to college.
Really? And this is, I didn't know that. This is 18, let's see now, he was born in 1820, so we're talking 1840s here now.
We're talking, Trinity College, and
okay.
That was it. And that unless you were kind of able to do strange things like Samuel Horton went, and he was a Quaker, but he managed to sort of adapt to the Anglican church.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you were prepared to do something like that, you weren't going to go to any of the universities, Oxford, Cambridge, Trinity, St. Andrews, any of them.
He was, just to paint a quick picture, he was born in Loughlin Bridge then,
yeah,
and his dad was
surveyor.
His dad was a constable, wasn't he? Or
yeah.
An RIC constable, as it was.
That's right,
then.
Yeah.
They weren't well off.
No.
What religion were they? They were.
He was a Quaker.
He was a Quaker, sorry, yeah, okay. So he showed a lot of promise, didn't he, in primary school? He went to the local primary.
Yeah, well, there was a famous teacher, John Conwell, in Ballinabranna. They persuaded the British government by various means to set up national schools in the whole of the country and then in all the dominions. So my father attended a national school in Owen Sound, which was just like the one in Loughlin, just like the one in Ballinabranna.
Mm-hmm.
but that's in Canada.
Sure, okay.
So
it's very similar, was it? Yeah.
It was identical.
Yeah, that's
so
interesting.
So the British used to try things out in Ireland and then ship the good plans overseas. So
we were the laboratory.
That's it. And anyway, he left after getting a proper training from Conwell in all kinds of things, including surveying.
Mm.
And he became a surveyor in the Ordnance Survey, but he led a strike. When he went to the UK, he found out the Irish surveying body were badly exploited vis-a-vis the English.
Right.
And he led a campaign, and he was sacked. And
okay.
Then he carried on the campaign with Robert Peel, who was the Prime Minister of England,
mm-hmm.
of Britain. So he wasn't going to win that one. And,
yeah.
Then he was a teacher in a revolutionary school in Hampshire.
Why would you say revolutionary now?
Well,
was it?
Because it was. It was set up by Robert Owen.
Okay, so it taught revolution.
No, so, yeah. It was a revolutionary educational
okay.
school. But Robert Owen was the founder of the British trades union movement.
Mm-hmm.
He was a communist.
Yeah.
In terms of commune. And this school was the first school in the British dominions to teach practical laboratory science and engineering.
Yeah.
And Tyndall was the superintendent of the engineering laboratory, and his friend Edward Franklin was the superintendent of the chemistry laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
After establishing the first laboratory courses in... That's why it's so important. They left very shortly thereafter to go to study with Robert Bunsen in Marburg.
Right, the Bunsen burner
man,
yes. Okay, so that's good. So he
got his PhD in...
Got his PhD in
mathematics.
In mathematics, right. Now, he returned and...
He did a lecture in the Royal Institution in London.
Which was, just to tell people, that's still a quite famous place.
It's the main kind of place for the well-to-do who want to go and be educated in science.
Would have been like our own RDS a little bit,
yeah,
maybe?
Very like the RDS.
It
was actually modelled on the RDS.
Okay, so people know what that is, yeah.
Yeah, Tyndall went there and gave a lecture, and it was obvious he was a brilliant communicator, and Faraday, who was the superintendent of the Royal Institution...
Michael Faraday,
took him on.
Mm.
And very shortly thereafter, Tyndall was effectively doing a lot of the work because Michael Faraday probably was suffering from mercury poisoning.
Right,
and,
okay.
And was kind of losing it a bit.
Right.
And...
just from being in the lab too much.
Exactly.
Mm.
And he ended up kind of taking on these method, which was a kind of experimental method, not mathematical, because Tyndall was trained as a mathematician. But after doing his PhD, he did physics in Berlin before coming back. So he ended up kind of doing his experiments on glaciers to promote and defend Faraday's theory of regulation, regelation, if you want to pronounce it the other way. The idea is that if you push two bits of ice together very strongly, they fuse.
Okay.
And the motion of glaciers, according to Faraday, was caused by the kind of the cracking of the glacier and the fusing of the ice as it moved. And this was a big debate, and Tyndall produced some wonderful experiments to prove that, you know, and show the mechanisms of regulation. And what happened then was he went off to the Alps, and then he started climbing.
Okay. Now, we just have a little bit of time left, so...
When he was in the Alps, he was looking at the sky and the atmospheric conditions, and he came back and he set up the experiments for monitoring the atmosphere and also experiments for monitoring gases and vapors and also water.
Okay.
So he's the founder of the science of atmospheric monitoring and environmental monitoring.
Right, and this really brings us to the reason, I suppose, why this lecture has been, or this conference has been held on the 29th, you know, because really he's regarded as the father of that science.
Well, in 1861, he gave the paper that they're celebrating is actually not the first paper.
Yeah.
The one he gave in the Royal Institution kind of explained the greenhouse effect, but Tyndall identified all the absorptions and emissions of all the gases and showed water vapor's importance in the atmosphere and carbon dioxide and everything.
Yeah.
And quantified it.
And he was a brilliant guy, really. So this is on the 29th. It's been held by the Environmental Protection Agency?
And the Royal Irish Academy.
Okay. Will you be there yourself?
Yeah.
Okay.
Richard Somerville is actually given the lecture from the University of California.
Okay, we've just run out of time, but thanks for coming on and telling us all about John Tyndall. That's
okay.
Norman Macmillan. He's a scientist, and he's written extensively on Tyndall. So we've run out of time now for this week, folks. Thanks very much for listening. Just to let you know, if you enjoy the show, why not visit the blog of the same name, Science Spinning, and that's at seanduke.com. I've got podcasts of all the shows, previous shows up there, and lots of other material besides. So in the meantime, maybe you'll join us again next week at the same time, 3:30 on a Thursday, to learn about science here in Ireland and around the world. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye for now.
Dublin News for Dublin People. Dublin City FM.
It's 4 o'clock. Good afternoon. I'm Bernard Whelan. The Catholic Archbishop of Dublin has said parishes with a surplus of to contribute general fund, which he said has not as yet been used to compensate victims of clerical sex abuse. Dr. Dermot Martin was responding to a report in the Irish Catholic newspaper which claims that parish funds are being used to cover the cost of clerical abuse claims in the Dublin Archdiocese. A bill that will pave the way for the introduction of a lower drink driving limits is being published today. The Road Traffic No. 2 bill will allow for mandatory breath testing at the new limits, which are due to be introduced next month. It will reduce the legal blood alcohol limit from 80 milligrams per 100 millilitres of blood to 50 milligrams per 100 millilitres of blood. The Irish economy, measured by GDP, grew by 1.6% in the second quarter of the year.